And welcome to another episode of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine. My name is John Kulis from the Netherlands, and I'm a part of bbsradio.com. I have live on the phone Nancy Talbot. She has a wonderful webpage called blpresearch.com. blpresearch.com. And for the people to know more about Nancy Talbot, you can actually go to that page, and you see all her research, and she's going to soon to go to the Netherlands again to visit Robert van der Broeke, who's a very famous psychic in the Netherlands. But we have more topics of discussion, and that is the strange phenomenon happening in France. But first, welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you doing?
Oh, I'm running around getting ready to... I hate these trips across the ocean.
Yes, and you have to go with, a long airplane trip. How much time do you need to fly to come to the Netherlands, by the way?
Well, it takes 7 hours to get there from the U.S., and curiously, it takes 8 hours to come home.
Okay. And you get a jet lag. Probably you have to accustom to different time frequencies.
No, it's the jet stream. When the plane flies against the jet stream, it slows the plane down. And so it literally takes an extra hour coming back from Europe to the States.
Yes, but you have to get accustomed that you have to sleep at a different time to the Netherlands, I guess. Also, your biological rhythm will be different.
Well, I'm a night person anyhow, so it
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And how many times have you been visiting for the Netherlands?
I've been there, I don't know, 7 or 8 times, maybe more.
Wow.
I've never counted, but many times. And recently also traveling to other countries, to France and to Italy and to Poland and to Belgium. There are so many very interesting things going on.
Yes. And the reason that you go to the Netherlands is because of a person that has actually a connection with the crop circles and have encounters with extraterrestrials and or interdimensionals, because you don't know what they really are. And he having strange pictures, strange anomaly, and he's one of the, in the Netherlands, one of the most famous psychic person who came in the news, in the special talk shows and special programs.
The fact is, John, that when I met Robert more than 10 years ago now, my primary interest was, and it still is to some extent, you know, the crop circles, and trying to find out what physical mechanisms are responsible for flattening these crops and creating these designs. And because the crop circles had started to form right around Robert, wherever he was, we thought that perhaps if we learned more about Robert and the phenomena around him, it would teach us something more about the crop circles, you see. Now, as things have evolved, many Robert's capabilities, his intuitions, etc., have grown so that it's not just about crop circles anymore. And it appears to me that many of these so-called paranormal phenomena, I don't use that label personally, that many of these unknown phenomena are related to each other. There's some thread that goes through all of this that ties it together. And Robert is, to me, an example that this may be true. You know, this may actually be so, that many of these phenomena that we label differently, such as out-of-body experiences or remote viewing or poltergeist activity or UFO activity or crop circles, that these things are not entirely separate events.
No,
and
they
I'm
are
hoping,
connected, yeah.
I think they are, and he may be one of the ways that we can learn a little bit more about how they're all connected and what they may mean.
Yes, and I have myself had also a crop circle formation after I requested it in 1997, I was also into crop circles since 1992. I organized a conference in the Netherlands to invite Colin Andrews to speak in the Netherlands, talking about crop circles.
So when did this one happen around you? What? Tell me about that one.
Now, what happened to me is that in 1997, I thought, why not a crop circle in the Netherlands? Because I want to have for myself one, you know, to see it, to want to touch it, want to be there. I don't want to go to England to have an experience.
Okay.
So I was kind of asking before I come to sleep, like there's a way to do that. Ask for to wish for something, and then the very next day, I was in the train. Together with my girlfriend at that time, and I had an urge to watch outside, very strong, and I didn't lie, and I said I had to look outside now, and together we looked down, and there it was. It was a 7-diameter, not a crop circle, but a grass circle, a grass of approximately 40 centimeters high, and all the grass around it was total chaos, and exactly perfect spiral, 7-meter diameter, perfect spiral grass circle. So I went over there and make pictures of it from above and from below. And, to duplicate this is very strange. And I think it was this year or last year, I saw that Robert van den Broek has also a green grass circle as well.
Many of the circles that form around in his area are in grass, although they're also in all the other crops, too. You know, it's interesting that you say that you asked for one, and then this occurred, because just only 3-4 weeks ago now, here in the United States, one of our field workers had gone to a crop formation in Wilbur, Washington. That's Washington State on the West Coast. And it was a lovely center-ringed circle with 8 outlying circles, 2 on the north, 2 on the south, 2 on the east, and 2 on the west. And it was in a very remote area where we've never had one before. And the field worker got there and did find these elongated top nodes that we look for all the time, the expulsion cavities, the holes, you know, blown out farther down the stems. She also noticed I don't know exactly what the word would be. She became quite disoriented in the formation. And this woman is a very down-to-earth, logical person, very business-minded, and doesn't normally have this effect, but she was very disoriented, had a lot of trouble actually doing the sampling, just concentrating, you know. And her father, who was a farmer and who was there helping her, he also became so dizzy with vertigo, he had to leave this crop circle. Well, interestingly, when they got home, it took her several days to recover. And on the second day, when she got up and went out into her backyard, a new crop circle had formed right there in her grass.
Wow.
So it appears that many times we have seen that when people pay attention to the phenomenon and take it seriously and are genuinely curious, you know, that sometimes the formations seem to go right where they are.
And what do you think about this one? When I have visions or having lucid dreams that you're aware that you're dreaming, the moment that I have a crop circle inside this vision or lucid dreaming, I have a total different approach or different feeling about it than when I'm in the physical. You know, when I'm just here talking to you, like just a Joan living on Earth, I have a sense of awareness of the crop circles being here on this planet. But the moment when you are in this lucid dreaming, I feel that they are kind of portals or gateways to something ancient, and that is what I felt all the time. All the time when I had this vision of crop circles or dreaming about it, is that it's a kind of portal to ancient times. Now, ancient times is connected to a lot of sorrow. Now, you know what? When I was explaining to someone, we call planet Mars as the planet of war, and then Venus the planet of love. But what about planet Earth? And then someone told me that it's the planet of sorrow. I think sorrow. Yes, sorrow. Because there's a lot of sadness happening on this planet, and And then every time I see a pop circle, I had so sense of sorrowness as well. It's like as if we've been drawn into a certain place that are ancient, and that we are actually, maybe we're going to reconnect with the heritage of this planet, what happened on this planet, that we are maybe allowed to have access what happened on this planet. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I feel that there is a connection between having access of what happened on this planet.
Well, I know that, gosh, my very first response, the very first time I ever saw a crop circle, was very similar to what you've just described. As far as it being some sort of the impression I had was that it was an invitation from a larger reality to become aware of that larger reality, to begin participating, perhaps, in that larger reality. But whether that would mean totally ancient times, I'm not sure. But I don't think it matters in a way that we can clearly name or put labels on all of these intuitions, more that we just simply understand that reality, as we understand it, is much more limited than reality really is. The reality is much more complex, more layers than what we generally perceive. And it seems that maybe people are getting ready to peel back some of these other layers. A friend of mine called the other day, very interested in orbs and things of that sort, and she's written a book about something about the veil listing. These are all, these are romantic terms, but they rather go with this instinct that lots of people have about the crop circles and about other things, that something is changing, a sensibility, an awareness is growing of a much larger reality than we currently expect to be,
Yes, I feel also that majority of the people agree with me that we are not using our full potential. And if we did, we have a totally different reality, different planet. So,
yeah.
So what it could be is that those symbols, what we see, is actually triggering us to have access of part of our who we are for a certain purpose, that you actually, by only watching it, something will be triggered inside of you. And that, of course, different with each other. And,
well, about the crop circles, John, it's very true that the phenomenon of crop circles seems to interact on an individual level with many people. Very individually, events will occur in relationship to the crop circles that will be apparently designed for a particular individual to recognize. I mean, it's so, you sit there and you think, oh, this is ridiculous, this can't possibly be so, and I have many times heard people say that, and then had an experience where something that they knew or something that was pertinent only to them then somehow or other got wrapped up in a crop circle situation where only they could really make sense of it. So I don't know. It's if nothing else, it's quite clear that if you pay attention to many of these phenomena, you start to think much more broadly than you would have otherwise. And I can't
also
imagine that that's not good for us.
I also feel that when we use the alphabet, in itself, it has no meaning. If you see A, B, C, D, if I say to you C or B,
right,
then you say, yeah, so what, B? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it has only meaning in a context. Now, what I feel with those crop circles, it is way beyond only language. It's like it's like an activation of awareness, or like, it has much more than the audible language. It's like almost like a 3D awareness that you can be triggered to have access to. And that is so difficult to explain to people. Most people think as language that you have to listen to audio conversation between two persons. That is a kind of language. But maybe there is also another kind of language going on that is, for most people...
Well, clearly, symbols, we know that ancient cultures... on rock art and petroglyphs and things around the world, that the same kind of symbols were repeated over and over and over again among these cultures that, as far as we know, had no communication. And yet each culture produced certain symbols over and over and over again. Perhaps these symbols are meaningful in some way to the human psyche. Perhaps they're hardwired into the human brain. But you see, for instance, a spiral. You see the spiral symbol in rock art and petroglyphs and ancient paintings all the time. It's clearly significant on some level to the human psyche.
Yes. Also, you know about Hans Jenny talking about cymatics and having this the power of sounds and frequencies creating a certain shape on powder, on a membrane, and then it resonates, and then you see very complex symbols appear, and some of them are comparable with crop circles. But I want to say something important. There was a interview done by Laura Lee, and she interviewed John Reed.
I'm sorry, John, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're cracking up so badly I can't hear you.
Okay, I will repeat. I listened to LauraLee.com to an interview with John Reed. And John Reed, he did some experiments with the sound shape power of the cymatics, you know, from Hans Jenny. And what he did...
John, I'm sorry, it's continuing. You're coming through very garbled, as if you were underwater.
Oh, my God.
I wonder if they can fix the line.
Maybe we have to call you back again, and then you come back to the show again. I don't know if they can hear me from BBS Radio. Can you actually...
Now it's better. Now it's better. It's gotten all right
okay. Now.
Oh,
okay. I will try to repeat the thing. I was listening to a Lower League radio show, John Reed, who did some experiments with cymatics, that the frequencies has an impact on shapes and so forth. And what he found out that if you go to sacred places like the cathedral, and he put up the equipment doing certain frequencies, symbols appear that are comparable with the symbols to be seen in that area. Now, when you go to the pyramid of Egypt and you're doing the same frequencies, then different kind of symbols appear that are comparable with the hieroglyphs. When you go to in Aborigines in Australia, and you do there, you know, all those cymatics equipment, they found out that the symbols that appear on those frequencies were comparable with the symbols that the Aborigines, the native people of Australia, do use in their art. So the question is, where do the people know what kind of symbols to use in their own location? Is it connected with vibration, frequency, shape? Is it all connected, awareness? I think it's connected.
One of the things that makes me think, or just points up to me, is that it's a thing that humanity doesn't yet understand about itself, which is that thoughts, each one of our thoughts, have impact. On the physical world, they have impact. They matter. And as you said, when you go to what you called sacred sites, in other words, places where large groups of people, or even small groups, have consciously labeled those places, those locations, as places where they would ponder the spiritual, ponder the great questions of life. When you have large numbers of people concentrating on the same idea and on the same area of thought, it clearly has an effect. Modern humans, I think, have lost touch with this understanding. They don't realize that what each one of us thinks, what each one of us is pondering, actually has an effect. And some of these so-called paranormal events, I don't think they're paranormal, frankly, at all. I think they reflect this ability of mankind to actually affect our reality through our thoughts. And that as we become more aware that we can do this, that this is one of our latent talents or abilities or capabilities, that we will, I think it will change how societies work altogether and
yes.
for the better.
And by the way, the shape of where you're at has a profound impact on your physical feelings and physical... So when you are in a building like a pyramid or a building like a cathedral, it's like a amplifier of something that is important there. And it's also on ley lines, energy lines of knots. So I think that the most people who are going to sacred places are actually knowing about those grid lines or ley lines going together, coming to a certain point.
Well, John, apropos of that statement, you should go to the BLT website, to the updates page, and
mm-hmm.
would you click on, I think it's the third or fourth item down there, John Burke's book, it's Seed of Knowledge. John Burke is the B in BLT, one of the people who started the BLT research team years ago. And he has been going to ancient sites, particularly sacred sites, around the
mm-hmm.
world now for some time. And what he discovered...
I'm at now there, yes.
All right, if you open that
it.
Up and you scroll down a little bit, you'll see that at many of these sites, he discovered certain magnetic anomalies. These are frequency anomalies in the Earth's surface and at these, the pyramids in Tikal, at ancient Indian sites here in the American Southwest, in France, at Karnak, at Stonehenge, you know, all of these places which were marked by the human cultures as being special and related to the spiritual realm. He found these magnetic anomalies consistently at these locations. You'll see there that he's taken photographs at these locations which show the light balls over and over and over again. All of this goes very normally or naturally with what you were just saying, that in fact, human intention, I think, in conjunction with certain shapes, John talks about this pyramid-shaped or corbel-roof-shaped structure, which, as you say, amplifies this intent. And
indeed.
Once amplified, it then has a great deal of power.
Wow. You have also some beautiful information about France. Something happened in France not that long ago that people taking weird pictures. So we're going to tell everybody to go to the BLTResearch.com.
Yes, .com, then go to updates.
Yes,
and it's the first item there, the Col de Vence, France.
Yes.
And
BLT
if you click
Research.
On that, you'll see this is an amazing story. A couple of years ago, I was in Belgium doing a lecture, and a man came from France. His name was Xavier, and he was a member of this small group of people who have been going to this area. It's in the Alps, very close to Nice. It's only about 30, 40 minutes from Nice if you drive up into the mountains, and it's a very remote. There are no houses, no buildings, nothing, just this pass through the mountains. And it's strewn with limestone everywhere. And this group has been going there for many, many years because they had heard that from local people that UFOs and other strange things, strange noises, strange fires would appear here, UFOs were seen, etc., you know, for many, many, many years. And so this group began going maybe 25 years ago now, when they were all quite young, and they would go for picnics or just to take walks or to ride their bikes, and they started to take photographs. Now, in those very early days, and at the beginning of this report, what I'm showing you are some of the very early film anomalies that they got, 10, 15, 20 years ago, all on film. Now, you know that many of the anomalies that people get nowadays are on digital cameras, and there are people who say that they are nothing, that the anomalies are nothing but some sort of artifact of the camera. Well, I wanted to show people that these anomalies also occur on film, and so the first 10 or so photos you see there are all shots taken on film maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago at Col de Vence. And if you look at them, I think you'll notice that some of these photographs, the anomalies in them, are very similar to ones that people are getting now on digital cameras.
Yes. I am pasting in the chat room the link that you're talking about.
Okay.
You call it eyewitness6.html on bltresearch.com. Yeah, it's amazing. And you have four pages, I saw that, but you have several pages to continue on that page, yeah. By the way,
in that first section, it's all on the film photographs taken years ago. Then you get to part two. And in part two, it was what I wanted to show people was a little bit, and believe me, this is a tiny example of the hundreds of anomalous photos that the group, the Col de Vence group, has been getting. And in particular, one man. You will see there a photograph of Pierre Beek, who is currently the man who gets the majority of the anomalies at Col de Vence. There's a small group of 10, 15 people. And what happens, and nobody understands this, is that one of the individuals in that group, for a period of years, will be the person who gets the anomalies. And then someone else starts to get them, and it will be the new person. Well, right now, it's this Pierre. And Pierre is using a digital camera. He has no particular technical ability. He doesn't even use a computer. And some of these photos you'll see in part two are shots that he has taken for the last maybe 10 years. Now, there are UFO photographs, and I've only shown a few of those. Some of those photos, they actually see the object with their eyes. That first photo, which says UFO, which was visually observed and photographed, that was one that everybody present saw the object. However, many of these strange objects, they do not see. No one sees them. Below, you see a triangular-shaped UFO. That one was not seen by the naked eye. Then we have a series of tubular, I don't know what to call these things, but none of these were seen by the human eye. They simply appeared on the cameras, and most of these were taken by Pierre. There is one shot there that you have a tube, sort of a setting sun and a tube, and it looks like a human figure just underneath the tube. I don't know if you're looking. You see that?
Yes, I'm looking.
There is no human being there. There was no one there. What is that thing beneath the tube? I don't have the faintest idea, but there was nobody there. That is a shot out across the mountains, and there was no one there at all. Then we get to a different kind of anomaly. Again, all taken right there at Col de Vence. You'll see a circular distortion in the sky in that first shot, and the trees are all bent. Beneath it, you see another circular distortion and what looks like snow. And it was a perfectly clear night in the middle of January. No snow at all. Then we get to some of these light ball photos. These are just a few of the literally thousands that they showed me that I saw when I was there. I'm trying to just give people an idea of the overall range of anomalies. Then we get to that zipper-looking thing. Many of those. The light anomaly below that, I don't know what to call it. It's just rather incredible. And then there were a number of these sort of bubble-like things. At the top of this one page, we've got a strange bubble-like thing in the sky. There are two photographs of this scene taken right next to each other, boom, boom, within a second of each other. The first one shows no anomaly. The second one shows the anomaly you see here. And then farther down, I'll go ahead.
Yes, it's amazing that you showed this and that you found it in your research. But before you continue, we have to say that people can actually phone in. Some people don't know how to do that, but actually if you go to untoldmysteries.com, you see the phone numbers, or you see on bbsradio.com, there's also the phone numbers to be seen. I will mention only two numbers for those who want to live interact with us and want to maybe ask questions. For people from the United States of America, call this number, 877-876-5227. I will repeat, for the Americans, it's 877-876-5227. Now, for the Canadians, we have another line for the Canadians, that is 888-815-9756. I repeat, 888-815-9756. Now, that's for the Canadians, so you can live, you know, call us. And for the international speakers, people outside America, you can also call, but you just go to untoldmysteries.com or unexplained.eu. Or go to bbsradio.com. There you see the phone lines for international callers outside the United States. Let's continue talking about those strange anomaly and phenomena in France.
All right. Now, I'm at the toward the end now of part two. This, again, is the Cole Devance report, eyewitness report number 6. And we're at the end of part two in those photos now. You'll see the last two photographs are a strange sort of smoky stuff. And then below that on the same page is sort of ghostly looking, I don't know, it looks like a hand to me. Now, this white smoky stuff is seen in crop circles all the time, photographed in crop circles. It's also photographed at a number of other spiritual or, you know, anomalous sites. And it is out of a material that looks just like that, that some of these creatures have emerged. What it means, I don't know. I mean, that all of this huge range of photographic anomalies are occurring at this Cole Devance site, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know what it means. But the fact is that it is going on and has been at least for 25 years now. There are thousands of photographs taken by many different people which show these anomalies regularly. These are not occasional anomalies or once in a while. This, whatever this is, occurs on a regular basis. And this group of people, the Cole Devance group, goes up there a couple times a week and has been doing
this. Do they speak English well? I hope so.
A little bit of English, yes. Pierre speaks English, and Xavier speaks some English.
Because I'd love to do an interview with them.
Yes, you should. And their website, if you go to part 3 of the report, you will see their website right at the very top. It's www.coldevance, coldevance.com. They have photographs on their website, too. But frankly, they don't have as many good ones as I do right now. I'm asking Xavier to put up more of the photos they have because there is this huge range, and they occur primarily with their group with digital cameras. But I, when I went to visit last fall, took both a film camera and a digital camera. I wanted to see if I could get them on film. Now, at the very beginning of part 3, that photograph there is one that was taken of me when I was there in October. And you see the strange light stuff coming off my glasses?
Yes, I see. It's like plasma effect.
Yeah, I mean, that is one that was taken when I was there. Now, what I'm doing in part 3 is showing you, first of all, some of my film anomalies. These are photographs I took last October with my film camera. It's a point-and-shoot. I have no great technical ability either. And the first one, Pierre is taking a drink in the village fountain. The water comes down from the Cole Devance Pass, and they have a little ritual where they always drink from that fountain before they go up into the mountains. I don't know what this blue stuff is all over the picture, but that was the first film anomaly I got. When we got up to the mountains themselves, I got many, many film anomalies, but primarily on film, what I noticed was that the color became weird. It disappeared. It became markedly weakened, not in every photograph, but in the majority. And I also got a number of these elliptically shaped balls of light. And again, that occurred only on the film. These first four photographs show you how the color is fading out of the film images. And that was in the daytime as well as the nighttime with these same kind of wispy-looking balls of light. Now, these particular balls of light, it's conceivable to me these might be dust particles or something like that with the flash reflecting, but I don't think so, primarily because this fading color was something that marked all of the anomalous shots that I got on film. Then we get to the page where you have the red streaks.
Yes, the naked.
These are digital photos. These are just a range of the digital anomalies that I got when I was there. Those red streaks, then the red light balls. The next shot are two shots taken right after, one after the other. And you see a car there on the side of the road. That's our car, which has been sitting there for a couple of hours at this point. There was no one inside the car. There was no light on inside the car. And yet, if you look at those two photos, I have no idea how to explain that. There was no one in that car.
Have you ever had there's a meaning for all of that? Do you get some strange, weird dreams that will explain this to you? Or have you had any kind of awareness?
Nope.
You don't know what it's right for?
I don't have the faintest idea. All I know is that I took those photographs. I took them one right after the other. There was no one in the car. There was no light of any sort up there. And yet, that's what happened. Now, what it means, I have to leave up to people smarter than I.
By the way, I have two very sensitive video cameras. One is an HD camera that can actually record for 24 hours straight. So it's a special camera, like a cinema. And, this 69... You know what I mean. It's a special broad, that you can see more. And it has also dark that you can move. You can actually film in the dark as well. But what I want to do is soon I'm going to give a workshop with people, and I want to hunt for certain anomalies with two cameras filming at the same time parallel. So one will film normal, and one will film that he's able to film in the dark at the same time. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So once something is happening, you can actually study both of them.
Yes, and it may teach you something. It may not. My impression more and more is that in these photo anomalies, not just at Cold Avance, but with Robert and many other people that I now know, I think that this energy that is causing the cameras to react like this is not an energy that we know anything about yet. Frankly, I don't think we can measure it, and I don't think we're going to be able to talk about it yet until science is caught up. But maybe not. The next two photographs are simply some more strange, digital images. But where I want to get on to this pink stuff that's coming up now in the middle of part three. We're going to look first here at a number of digital photographs taken by Pierre of me. I mean, I was standing right there. I was watching him all the time carefully. I know what he did and didn't do. He did nothing unusual. He simply would point the camera and take a picture. And here you'll see a whole range of these anomalies in which, I'm right there. I'm watching him. In the beginning, we have this sort of round distortion. Again, that thing with my glasses and the plasma sort of discharge thing. Then we have a photograph of light balls. We had many, many, many of these. That's just one of them. And then below, Xavier and I are on the side of the road, and there's this tube of light that's come down and is all around my body. Now, we didn't see anything during these shots. I mean, nothing unusual at all. As far as I knew, there was absolutely nothing peculiar going on. And yet those are the photographs that Pierre was getting. Then you have two where, again, it's me in the picture. There's some sort of a light object in front of me in the top one. And in the bottom one, it was drizzling that night, and I had an umbrella. That umbrella is opaque. You cannot see through it. And yet if you look at the picture, you again see this white, these streaks of whatever, and you see my head underneath the, through right through the umbrella, which you can't see for real. And on top of that, my hair is that sort of orangey color, and my hair isn't, it's brown. So what that all means, I don't know, but those were just a selection of some of the shots. He got many, many anomalous shots while I was there, but the only ones I had that he'd given me were the ones of me, so that's the ones I used. But
also,
I think
the square object is also weird to see.
Oh, they're all strange. I mean, it's all strange.
Yeah.
The thing that I noticed most, though, about Cole Devant, and this was something I really wanted to get to, is what we see in Part 4. I have never, over the years, I've been getting many, many more anomalous photos. Never when I take regular photographs of the family of, you know, whatever. Only when I am either in crop circles or near them or with people who are particularly interested in this sort of thing or at a special place. That's when I get them. I do not get them in normal photography, even though I'm using exactly the same cameras. Now, at Cole Devant, what started that year for me were these big pink light balls. I had never gotten anything like this before, but they started at Cole Devant. And after Cole Devant, I went to Italy, where they also occurred. Then I went to see Robert in Holland. He and I both got them up there. Then I went to Poland, and I got them again. I don't know what it means, but here you can see it starting. There was one guy in the Cole Devant group who was not getting any peculiar photos at all. His were perfectly normal. And he was rather spiritually inclined, I would say, where the rest of the group is not. He was sad because he wasn't getting anomalies. And I started to focus on him one night as he walked up the hill. We were having a picnic. And I noticed right away that I was getting light balls whenever I would take a picture near him. And then they started to get this pink stuff. And any time that I would shoot when he was near, I would get dozens of these. I mean, you can see them. They're all different sizes, different colors, sometimes just a few, sometimes dozens of them. And when I shot directly at him, there's one picture there where you can see, this is Jean-Paul. He's holding up his camera, and when I shot right at him, you see the anomalies there. They're surrounding him. So these are digital photos that I took of this pink thing. Then we move on to Pierre's pictures at the same time, and this next batch is all from Pierre's camera. Again, when he shot as Jean-Paul, you see the pink light balls everywhere. Then we decided to start shooting. He did. He would shoot at me or Jean-Paul or the two of us together. And all the rest of these are shots where we're standing together, taken by Pierre, with these mammoth distortions in just shot after shot after shot.
Amazing.
There are a whole bunch of them there. Then, the final...
And do you also think that it can happen because of the interaction energies between humans. Maybe
that's what I think.
I think something
about Pierre's energy or Jean-Paul's energy or mine or our combination and the place instigated this particular thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, there was one event that occurred while we were there that they had told me about. There are these noises that occur from time to time, like a rock, you know, somebody's thrown a rock. And yet, we were a small group, and we were all in the same place. This noise occurred, and there was no one anywhere in a place that could have caused this noise. So we went over, and Jean-Paul points at the tree, and you see there a normal photograph. Then we started to shoot the area. And the rest of these photos are anomalous photos that occurred right after that noise, whatever it was. Now, at the very end here, the next to the last photograph, this is the most important photograph, I think, in the whole report. Jean-Paul, as I told you, was sad because he was not getting light ball photos. He was getting perfectly normal photos. And one night, I looked at him, and it hit me that I did not need anymore, that I had gotten enough of the anomalous photos to prove to myself that there was something unusual going on here. And so in my head, I said, I don't need any more. Give mine to him, meaning Jean-Paul. Let Jean-Paul have some. Immediately, John, immediately, I stopped getting anomalous photos, and Jean-Paul started to get them. For the next hour, I tried and tried and tried. I didn't get one more that night, and Jean-Paul was getting them every 2 minutes. Well, toward the end of that night, I had gotten tired or bored, really, because I wasn't getting anything. So I put my camera away, and we were all standing about 8 feet away from the car. Now, this is the next to the last photograph. What you're looking at there is a car parked on the right-hand side of the road. That gray strip coming out to the front of the photograph to the left, that's the road. Jean-Paul looked at the car and, just being silly, said, "I'd like to see that car explode." And he was being silly. I think there were seven of us there. We are all standing right with him. He raises his camera and takes one shot, and the shot he got is the one we're looking at right here. Now, we are no more than 8 feet away from that car. Not one of us saw anything. No one saw anything with our eyes. And yet, you can see in the picture this light shooting out of the car.
Yes, I see it.
Can you see that?
It's all
The things that are important about this is, number one, normal light, if you shoot a beam of light out, it becomes more and more faint as it gets towards the end of its range. If you'll notice, those lights don't do that. They stop. They stop.
Truncated lights, yeah.
Exactly. And secondly, look underneath the light. You will see that the road is lit up. It is actually lighting up the roadway.
Yes.
And yet not one of us saw a single thing with our eyes.
Yeah, this is amazing. I wonder, is it action with the mind? Is it something else? What is it?
I don't think we are educated enough or aware enough or something enough yet to really understand this, but that photograph illustrates to me, the one with the car exploding, that the energies involved in creating these strange images, it is not normal light. Normal light does not behave like this. There is no way that you could have 7 or 8 people standing within 8 feet of that car, looking right at it while he takes the photograph, and seeing absolutely nothing, and yet the photograph reflects this massive discharge of light. The way they end, they just stop. Light beams don't do that, normal light.
No. There's also a question in the chat room from someone with a nickname called Monster Wave. Anyone using infrared cameras? Infrared cameras on that trip?
Not on that trip, no. There has been some work done now, and I think the Col de Vence people are going to report on that.
Okay.
There are many, many approaches that people are thinking about trying to carry out there, and it will be interesting to see what they get. But what I'm observing over and over again, not just at Col de Vence, but at many of these other sites and with many of these other people that I now know around the world, this energy is not an energy we have a name for.
Part of the photographs, I have a feeling there's a time distortion as well, a local time distortion.
Well, there is also that possibility, I think. A report that I am putting up on the BLT website, it won't go up until I get back from Europe this time, but this is a new report from my last visit to Robert in October, and some very amazing things went on. And in one of them, in one of the instances, an apparition, a being appeared. I don't know what you call it. A creature appeared. A man appeared, and then a creature appeared. There was a whole instance one night. And we were photographing as this occurred. And both Robert and I had the impression that the entire incident had lasted only a few minutes. It turned out that there is a clock on the wall that happened to be in the first photograph and also in the last one. And so we were able to prove how long the whole thing took because we got 25 photographs during this incident. And it took 13, 14 minutes, which we were not aware of having transpired, you know.
I have 4 or 5 minutes left. I want to have two questions that I always have want to ask about crop circles. Is there ever been anyone on this planet who came with the idea of using the crop circle symbols to show that to the dolphins?
I haven't yet heard of that, no.
But it would be maybe great to do a test. What will happen if you, you know, just show the photographs of the best of the best? And then look at the responses. Who knows? Maybe some of the dolphins recognize those symbols.
Well, and the problem would be you'd have to know how to understand dolphin language to know.
No, I would guess the one who's working with the dolphins has a kind of experience how they behave when they show just showing pictures. And then they know if something is new, they have a certain way of watching. And maybe because of watching of the crop circle symbols, maybe they are completely hypnotized, like, hey, you're looking much longer than average. You see what I mean?
Yes, well, you should suggest that to one of these people who works with dolphins.
Yes, that would be a great test. And the other one that I want to ask is, has there been a crop circle being used and that you definitely know 100% that it's a genuine crop circle and that you put a bigger pyramid on that location, and has that ever been tested, that you use a pyramid, like a framework of a pyramid, putting on that spot? Maybe something strange things will happen if you do that.
I don't know if anyone has done that either. There are people who are interested in the pyramidal structure, and there's a man here in Illinois that I know who's very interested in that, and he's also interested in crop circles, whether he's actually taken the framework to a crop circle and placed it there, I don't know. But I do remember a photograph that was sent to me from a person who was, he did a great deal of meditation and whatever in Alaska, and he had one of these frameworks, I think it was copper, you know, shaped like a pyramid. And when he placed it in his backyard and then asked for the light balls to come in, they did so regularly, and he could photograph them, and did. And they would come right into the pyramid shape, and he got quite a number of photographs of them right there. In fact, in one time, he apparently went and sat inside the pyramid with the light ball right there, and took several photographs of it right there.
Yes.
So again, it suggests that these things are interrelated, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, definitely. Before we go, I want to mention that I will go to America in September 2008. I'm being invited to give a lecture on the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Jose in California. And the Bay Area UFO Expo, you can just go to the Bay Area UFOExpo.com, or you just Google Bay Area UFO Expo. You will see there is a 25th and the 26th August. This is a huge conference, and I'm happy that I'm invited to speak there. So you will see me. The Americans will finally meet me.
You'll enjoy California, I'm sure. The weather is almost always delightful.
Wonderful.
Okay, it was very nice.
Yeah, well, fairly nice having you on the radio show, Nancy.
Thank you so much, John.
And thank you for sharing, and I'm looking forward to you, to see you coming to the Netherlands.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye. Okay, people, this is John Curtis from the Netherlands on Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. And if you want to know more about me, just go to click in untoldmysteries.com or unexplained.eu. And EU stands for Europe. So unexplained.eu, you can see my site. And I will also give a workshop for the Dutch people. If you're Dutch or from Belgium, you can actually see that I will give a workshop at the end of this month, 30th and 31 August. I wish you all the best, and see you next time. Bye-bye.